From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Cadet. You're listening to Idaho Matters. Idaho is the only U.S. state where blacks earn more than whites and all other races. That's the conclusion of a new study that looks at the history of blacks in Idaho, and it asks why the Gem State's black community has had such economic success here. The study is titled Idaho Blacks, Quiet Economic Triumph of Enduring Champions, and it was written by Philip Thompson, the director of the Idaho Black History Museum, and Rama Malati, associate professor of finance at California State University, Dominguez Hills. And they're joining us now to talk more about this. Welcome to the program, both of you. Philip, can we start with you? Let's just begin with your findings here in Idaho that I mentioned, that black people earn more than white people in other races. Just that right there, I think almost puts people, it takes people aback, because not necessarily in a, you know, in a bad way, but this is not something that we often see. So how did you figure this out?
So actually, all credit needs to be given to Dr. Malady, because he's the one who actually went down this path. I can anecdotally speak to it, but he can speak more powerfully to the actual core numbers. But in essence, it's a per capita thing, obviously, but blacks in Idaho are overwhelmingly a white collar profession. And that's been like the history from day one, that we've been able to acquire or possess the skills that were able to be employable in a given area. And Idaho so happens to be the one place that we've been able to do that at a level much greater than most. Mm. And fun fact is, Idaho territory as a whole, Idaho, Montana, Wyoming, occupy three of the four top spots nationally. So it's not just Idaho, it's something geographically that's going on here.
So Professor Malady, talk to us about this. How did you come about finding these numbers, figuring this out?
So in the month of February, I was doing a survey of the history, economic history of blacks in the United States, to see how they are progressing. And then I came up on this fact that Idaho is the only state where blacks earn more than whites and all other races. And it's just not Idaho. In fact, the Pacific Northwestern states, Wyoming, as Phil just mentioned, Wyoming, Montana, and Oregon, they all are in the top five states. So though one can argue in the data that the validity of the survey results of a small population is difficult to make general conclusions, however, the Pacific Northwestern states as a whole have achieved almost near economic parity with the whites. And this, I have never stepped in Idaho, so I couldn't make sense of it. So I contacted the Boise Museum Association, and they put me in touch with Philip Thompson at Idaho Black History Museum. And then we went back and forth. We worked on the paper for about 3 months. And then we have a study which basically tells us that there is something unique in this region. And this survey data that we relied on comes from what we call the Current Population Survey, or CPS, which was released in July 2020 by the U.S. Department of Labor. So that is the foundational study for our analysis. The CPS study itself is sponsored by the U.S. Bureau of Statistics. It's the primary source of labor force statistics for the U.S. population.
So, Professor Malady, when we're talking about blacks earning more than whites or other races here in Idaho, how much more are we talking about? Do you have numbers?
Sure. So in the latest CPS data that we just mentioned, Idaho is the only place where blacks earn more than whites. They earn 6% compared to the whites. However, in other Pacific Northwestern states, it's almost close to, let's say, 100%. It is slightly below 100%, but they are in the vicinity. So we can, in general, say that the Pacific Northwestern states have achieved some kind of economic parity between blacks and whites in terms of earnings.
So, Philip, when Professor Malady contacted you with this information, what was your reaction? Were you surprised? Were you, you know, saying, well, or were you not by this information?
It was reinforcing and encouraging because anecdotally, I always knew it to be true that the more I traveled, especially like when I was little, my mom made us go visit like family in LA or elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And the more I dipped around the US and as I got older and paying much more attention to like the difference of how we live, the older I got, the more I realized like how unique Idaho was and how unique like the Black population here. Because certain phenomena that exist elsewhere that we just flat out don't have here at the same scale. And I mean, even just the notion of the church I went to as a child, everybody who was there was gainfully employed, had come for school or families had been there for generations, but you didn't have this generationally impoverished section of town that was ethnically homogeneous, exclusively mm-hmm. Black people. And so I knew it to be like anecdotally, but it was like beautiful to hear that it's not just a feeling I had, but it's actually supported by the data that there is something freakishly unique that goes on here. And it's not just us, it's the Northwest as a whole. So that also gives, you know, credit to Montana, Wyoming, that we have done something, even if it's by accident, that the rest of the country is like clamoring to try to make a reality, but no one bothered to look to see if in fact it's already happened somewhere, and lo and behold, it's Idaho.
So, Philip, I do not want to sound uneducated or ill-informed or anything like that. But with that said, I am personally sitting here grappling with this information because, as I mentioned in the beginning, this is something that we are, that across the United States, you know, for the most part, this is not the case. But secondly, Idaho is known historically for for white supremacy. I mean, for basically trying to whitewash an entire state, and so it is this. I'm just sitting here thinking, this is amazing that we have this in a state that is so known, I think, in so many ways for racial hate. I mean, so how do we kind of balance those ideologies? Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. I think that, so I chuckle because you do, if you look, the narrative that people speak of Idaho is contrary to what the data supports. And I'm not saying that we're some like utopian society that we have no ethnic issues whatsoever, but that narrative is pushed by a small, very vocal population. And that for the most part, no one's really ever felt the need to ever one, refute it. Or look to see, okay, if we're talking about racial violence or racial hatred, how many acts of violence have been perpetrated in that cause? And when you look on that level, as far as like, especially in comparison to historical trends, you realize like, wow, the rhetoric comes out of what we hear about up north, but it's not reflective of what's happening in the entire state. And I think it's kind of our own issue as Idahoans that we're overwhelmingly a soft-spoken culture. We don't really feel the need to refute the ideology. It's much more of a libertarian, you do you, I do me. But we've never gotten in the way of that narrative and correct them politely and say, well, listen for a minute, people. Look at the history of Idaho. Mr. Oppenheimer, his family came here in like in 1860. The oldest synagogue west of Mississippi is Boise, Idaho. The most successful refugee resettlement location in the world is Idaho. Blacks were able to own land here since its inception. It was a free territory. We integrated schools 80 years before the Supreme Court. So, yes, I totally agree. The narrative that Idaho is some bastion of white supremacy and me growing up here must have been littered with fear and being mindful of the Klan or racial acts of violence. And if you really look at the data, that just wasn't true. And even anecdotally, I'm 47 years old. I had it pretty good. Now, granted, I was in the North End. Granted, I was in Boise. But still, if you really look at acts of violence perpetrated, under the veil of hatred, racial hatred, Idaho per capita is well ahead of the rest of the nation as far as not like acts of violence, like really tangible, palpable violence. Yes, we have some folks up north that have a little extremist ideology. But courses of violence that were perpetrated by them in that ilk, they're kind of few, if not non-existent.
Yeah, you even talk about that in this paper, Philip, right? Where if we look historically at this, like let's even look at lynchings, and you mentioned this in this paper as one example, and you say in the paper Idaho had 20 lynchings, but of white people, but no lynchings of black people. So is that, you know, part of what we need to be looking at historically? I know that's just one example. But, you know, if you go down south, that is not the case at all.
Exactly. And so I think, and I totally agree, ma'am. It's just the problem is, like, we've got these little narratives and nobody ever challenges narrative with facts or looking to see if, in fact, the narrative is accurate. Now, we can regurgitate any misinformation we like, and that's typically in the modern era what happens. We typically don't challenge to see if what we're saying is factual or based on truth. And locally, I think it is very popular to vilify Idaho and not look at what they're doing exceptionally. And again, back to the Idaho culture, we're not the most braggadocious people. And I don't know that anybody has ever bothered to look in before Dr. Malady did so to see if, in fact, this phenomenon exists. And I just assume that if someone were looking, they would look someplace like D.C. or a place where we're known to have a historical black elite. It just wouldn't kind of occur to the layman to say, hey, let me go look in the Pacific Northwest where there's a somewhat scant population of black people and see how they're doing there. It just wouldn't even, there's nothing that would precipitate that course of inquiry.
So Dr. Malady, what was it about Idaho and the Pacific Northwest that made you decide to, you know, to do this study and you know, and then you came with the conclusion that you did?
I didn't start with Idaho in this study. I wanted to see what is the current state of blacks in the United States right now economically. Mm-hmm. And Idaho just happened to be the place which is far ahead than everybody else. And that's why I came to Idaho to find out what may have caused this. Because as I just mentioned, I never stepped in Idaho before. So all the analysis that we did is based on the historical documents. Also, the newspapers have lots of archives. One thing we did notice is a detailed historical narrative of Idaho blacks is unfortunately sparse. It doesn't exist. So all mm-hmm. that exists is a collection of newspaper articles, etc. So we went back and looked at these newspaper articles and other academic literature. As an example, between 1882 and 1946. So this is a while ago, there were more than 2.5 times as many blacks as whites were lynched in the United States. But as you just mentioned, in Idaho, there were none for blacks, even though 20 whites were lynched. So statistics and data like this pointed us to a direction in which we basically came to the I wouldn't say conclusion because it needs more eyes and more analysis. We basically have come to the conclusion here that there were a few barriers to land ownership, the smaller population, and a reasonably friendly community at that time. The community also was very well knit. The black community always had a church that they hung around. And also the community was a lot more friendly or less hostile to this micro population. So all these factors, when you put together, it basically gave the entrepreneurial spirit to basically nourish in this region. And that is what we have come to understand in this study.
So, Philip, I know you mentioned, too, that historically blacks in Idaho had fewer barriers to land ownership. However, we also know that redlining happened. There's an area of Boise that we know that was, you know, where redlining did happen. So with that said, what kind of fewer barriers did blacks have? And then I would assume, as we know, generational wealth matters. And if you own land, that's one way to have generational wealth. So did that also contribute to where blacks in Idaho stand today?
I think part of that, we have to look at like the issue in its totality, because yes, redlining was a phenomena here, but for the vast history of Idaho, redlining was like a short-lived phenomena as opposed to a original method of keeping people excluded. So like my great-great-grandfather's land that we still own in the family is a block off of Warm Springs. He was a janitor and a preacher. He came in early 1900. It wasn't until the 50s that they had like an actual systemic effort to preclude where black people could live. That offer for that operated for 20, 30 years, but then was also rescinded. So you've got the difference of a 30-year effort to exclude, but then in the, Idaho became a state in 1890 until the modern day. Out of that entire time, yes, for 30 years people were excluded, but most of the lands that we own in the family currently are in redlined areas, or like my great-great-grandfather's, it was not. So it wasn't like it was a universal prohibition that excluded blacks. It made it it was an obstacle that we had to navigate. I grew up in the North End. The Terrells, Warner Terrell, he lived down the street, his parents. And again, that was in the era of redlining. So it's not to say that it didn't affect some. I'm just making the opposite observation that it didn't necessarily affect all. And there are a even with redlining, we don't have the probably the most cancerous phenomena that affects the black community in other cities, like black homicides, rampant violence in areas that are like systemically left out of the fray as far as economic what I'm saying, economic inclusion. We didn't have that latter part of it, right? I mean, being a landowner is going to help, period, provided it's not in an area that suffers from those other social ills. Idaho, for the most part, we don't have those social ills, and we definitely didn't have them in the areas of town that I used to speaking of, like the River Street area. My mother was there when she was a kid temporarily, up until she was like five. It was a very tight-knit community, also made up of immigrants and people from elsewhere, not just black people, but what existed there, there was no undercurrent of crime or victimizing others who lived there. And so that's even has an a uniquely Idaho ilk to it, because you didn't have this co-occurrence of being excluded and being forced to live into what would be in modern day terms like a war zone. It's just it, Idaho again, it's a different arc than what we think of nationally. I mean, just what was it, like 3 months ago, my stepbrother's kid was murdered in middle class Atlanta, Georgia, selling a cell phone. The number of black homicides that have existed in Boise, Idaho, or even Idaho as a whole, Chief Masterson and I was discussing this a couple months ago. We can think of two that happened like in 2006. There was an issue, then a reprisal, and that was it. It's just an entirely different a community.
Well, my heartfelt condolences to your family for that for that homicide. With that said, though, Philip, I think you bring up such a good point about kind of the personality and ideology of Idaho and Idahoans. I mean, you were born and raised here. My husband was born and raised here. There is something unique about Idaho and Idahoans, and you go back to this independent philosophy, right? It's kind of like, just let me do my thing, you do your thing, and we'll go on our merry way. And you just don't. And when you try to explain that to people who don't live here and truly who haven't lived here for a long time, I think it's something that kind of befuddles people, because it really is a uniquely Idaho perspective. And do you think that that has played into what this study revealed?
I completely agree. I think that's got to be one of the myriad of epiphenomena that led us to this really odd space of where we are now. But yes, Idahoans, if you want to irritate an Idahoan, tell them what to do. I mean, we're much more on the ilk of, okay, I'm going to do me, and provided me doing me doesn't interfere with you doing you, leave me alone. And so that approach, kind of, you're like, I respect you as a human. You're my neighbor. I mean, I agree with everything you do, but we're going to deal with each other respectfully and then stick to our own whatever as far as that goes. What you do is your business, what I do is mine. And I think really, if you look at it, I mean, it sounds like hyperbole, but whenever someone comes to the museum, first question I ask is if they're visiting or local, because if they have that kind of star in their eyes look, they're not from here, because they're really trying to figure out how this place ticks, and they're shocked at what they find. And they're shocked that we have a Black History Museum. They've never heard of what like a Basque person is, but they said we're going to visit the Basque flock. They're unaware of our old Jewish history. They have, if you're not from the East Coast, they're not familiar with the Latter-day Saints. I'm like, no, Idaho has long since been a refuge for whatever your ideology is, because we have like the luxury of space and resources where like usually ethnic violence and social violence is kind of precipitated by scarcity. And provided we like get that narrative out there and tell people, hey, we can coexist and disagree, we can continue to have what we have. Because what we have, let's be honest, I mean, it's not like you lived here for a while, you know that this is not like anywhere else.
Oh, no, not, I mean, not at all. Not even, and I've lived all over the United States. And that's even why I think I can just say anecdotally, Idaho is so uniquely different in that regard. With that said, Dr. Malady, I'm curious now that you have spent time, here you do this study, you find out this information, and you've been talking with Philip. He's written this paper. What has been your thoughts on what you've learned about Idaho?
Idaho, I think, has historically attracted the population. For example, in 1870, there were only 60 blacks in the Idaho territories, whereas by 2020, the population grew by 262 times. Whereas in comparison, the white population grew by 142 times. So, compared to all the other groups, blacks have not just now been historically attracted to Idaho, and I think Idaho provided a relatively friendly environment for the community to flourish. The black population in Idaho, for example, has grown in double-digit percentages in all decades since we studied the data, in all decades except during the Great Depression and World Wars. So what we are seeing is not a new phenomenon. It has been for a while, since 1870, and I think this definitely requires a deeper understanding. What we have a collection of about 65 newspapers, but to compile them and also to go through all of them in a systematic way, it requires an effort, a research team's effort. We have highlighted some areas which we think are important pointers to look at, whereas a team effort is required, and I urge the Idaho community to spend time, because as a nation, we have something very interesting going on in Idaho, which we all can benefit. The entire nation and the community can benefit if we can properly analyze what happened in Idaho, and if any of these factors that we find can be transportable to other states. And I think that's a huge discovery for all of us.
And before I let you go, I mean, Philip, I know one of the conclusions that you point to is a need for further study of Idaho's Black history. What do you think needs to be done in that regard? And to go on what Dr. Malady just said, can Idaho serve as a model to for the rest of the country?
If in fact they're willing to digest the information without any bias or preconceived notion, because one thing I've noticed is because it's Idaho, everybody wants to immediately attack it, disregard it, say, oh, that's not possibly true. And because they're still okay with like vilifying that Idaho is somehow doing something wrong as opposed to following the data, right? So if people can really like objectively look at it and say, hey, okay, how is that possible? Let's look at least what wasn't done. Because one thing I chuckled at what's being done nationally currently as far as this narrative, how they're going to fix this, totally misses the boat if one compares it to what was done in the Northwest. Because in the modern era, we're not dealing with the same variables as far as like facing an existential threat that blacks did back then. So let's be mindful of that. I mean, heck, we went through a two-term black president. To say it's the same as the 1950s, 1960s, or even 1980s is intellectually dishonest. But with all that, plain and simple, you have to have skill sets that are employable, an education that provides you to acquire those skill sets, and then a means to take advantage of the opportunity with hard work. it's really no more simple, complicated than that. I mean, the biggest group between, I mean, the difference between haves and have-nots in the modern era, especially in Idaho, it's not a racial thing. It's whether or not you have access to the skill sets that allow you to be gainfully employed. Because me living in Boise, Idaho, I have access to everything. If you're living in Cottonwood or any other small town, Idaho, that you don't have access to just the training that you're hoping to get, you're not going to be able to do a third of what we can do here. And nobody really seems to really be talking about that issue, that it's not entirely a racial issue. It's a resource issue.
Well, I appreciate this conversation so much. I learned a lot. Really appreciate both of your time today. So thank you so much, both of you, for coming in. We've been talking with Philip Thompson, the director of the Idaho Black History Museum, and Dr. Rama Maladi, associate professor of finance at California State University, Dominguez Hills, talking about their paper on why Blacks in Idaho earn more than whites and all other races. Again, thank you both so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Jim.
Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
From an Iraq war cover-up to towns ravaged by opioids to the roots of our modern immigration crisis, Embedded explores what's been sealed off and undisclosed. NPR's original investigative podcast reveals why these stories and the people behind them matter. Listen to the Embedded podcast, only from NPR.